contradicts UN resolutions, especially UN Security Council resolutions on Western Sahara.
Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the former head of the Iranian Defense Ministry's Organization of Defensive Innovation and Research, was assassinated on November 27, 2020, when the car he was riding in came under attack near his countryside residence east of Tehran. Fakhrizadeh had reportedly been on Israel's hit list since at least 2007.
This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Ahmad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
But he wasn't the only Iranian scientist to have been targeted by Israel. The regime made several assassination attempts between 2007 and 2012 that claimed the lives of four nuclear scientists and wounded another. That's on top of sabotage attacks on Iran's nuclear sites that have become more frequent over the past months. Iran has vowed to continue the work on its peaceful nuclear program. The international community, however, was largely silent over the recent assassination, a similar attitude of indifference that's displayed toward Israel's airstrikes on Syria and its aggression on the Palestinian people.
Point is simple. Israel is America's most important friend and ally in the Middle East and in North Africa. Israel is exempt from prosecution in the eyes of America, simply because without Israel, America's position in the Middle East and in North Africa would be in serious jeopardy.
Iran has vowed a harsh response against those behind the attacks on Iranian nuclear scientists and sites. A report published by the New York Times suggests that the United States has called on Israel to stop its attacks on Iran's nuclear program, suggesting that they could help strengthen Iran's capabilities. The article cites officials familiar with the discussions who said Washington has told Tel Aviv that the attacks are ultimately counterproductive, as Iran has been able to replace the damaged centrifuges with newer and much more capable ones within months. According to the article, the U.S. officials have admitted that Iran has improved its defenses, including with regard to its cybersecurity, rendering an attack similar to the Stuxnet virus extremely difficult to succeed. Israeli officials have reportedly rejected the U.S. call, saying they don't have any intention of ending their anti-Iran policies. Yet the credibility of the whole report is under question, as Washington and Tel Aviv hardly disagree on matters, especially in the case of Iran.
The Americans understand that Israel's actions often cannot be defended publicly. So it cannot always be seen in public as siding with the Israelis. So that is why from time to time the Americans will issue a public statement saying that they have issued a caveat to Tel Aviv about their actions vis-a-vis Lebanon or vis-a-vis Iran.
The report could also be a scare tactic in an attempt to obtain concessions ahead of a key talks in Vienna on the obligations of the parties to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. But Iran has repeatedly stated its firm position that the talks must end in the removal of all anti-Tehran sanctions.
On life support and tatters and on the verge of collapse. These are some of the terms that have been used to describe the current status of the hard-earned nuclear deal that emerged in 2015 after so many rounds of painstaking diplomacy between Iran and the P5+1 group of countries. The deal is almost dead, with the U.S. having abandoned it, the European parties failing to abide by their commitments or make up for the damage from the U.S. withdrawal, and Iran having rolled back some of its commitments. Who's to blame for the status quo? Many point the finger at former American President Donald Trump and his favorite maximum pressure policy involving a long list of anti-Iran sanctions. His successor, Joe Biden, a vociferous critic of Trump's confrontational approach, has insisted that he wants to return to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. But after taking office in January, his administration has enforced every single sanction that the former president imposed against the Iranians. This has led Iran to doubt Biden's seriousness. Iran and the P4+1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, held six rounds of talks in the Austrian capital, Vienna, between April and June to find a path back into compliance with the deal. But critics say the Biden administration missed that window of opportunity by refusing to make up for America's unilateral withdrawal and provide proper assurances that it will not violate the deal again. Despite this, the involved parties are going to give diplomacy another chance with a new round of talks scheduled to take place later this month. Discussions are set to resume in Vienna next week. Top negotiators from Iran, Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany will sit down for talks again. U.S. representatives will also be in the city, but not in the same room, as Iranians won't directly talk to the party that unilaterally withdrew from the international deal. What are the talks' chances of success? Iran says to be successful, the dialogue must lead to the removal of sanctions. Tehran also insists that America must offer guarantees that it will not abandon the deal again. The U.S. has repeatedly rejected Iranian demands for such guarantees. How is the U.S. planning to deal with its seriously damaged credibility? The head of Iran's permanent mission to the international organizations in Vienna said this week that the United States should prove its goodwill by removing sanctions against Tehran. During a meeting of the International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors, he said that the credible and effective lifting of sanctions is the basis of Iran's willingness to abide by the terms of the agreement. He said it is unfortunate that European countries still do not want to openly condemn the unilateral withdrawal of the United States and the reimposition of sanctions, which is the only cause of all current problems.
First of all, in order to understand Europe, you have to understand the European Union. To understand the European Union, you have to understand it is under the control of Germany. Germany is a vassal state of the United States of America. Germany was conquered after World War II, where they lost the war, and they have been a vassal state ever since that time. The vassal does not tell the sovereign what to do. That's why they're not arguing with the United States. The United States tells them what to do, not the other way around.
It is definitely hard to guess what direction the talks will take, but the next meeting could shed light on how the two sides will approach the discussions.
Every year on the fourth Thursday of November in the United States, people hold ceremonies to celebrate Thanksgiving. The annual Thanksgiving holiday tradition in the U.S. goes back to when English settlers arrived at U.S. coasts. The landing was followed by a religious celebration by the settlers, but it proved disastrous for the indigenous people living there. It was just the beginning of pillage perpetrated in the service of European expansionism. Native Americans were greatly affected by the European colonization of the Americas. The annual celebration has come to symbolize the genocide of Native Americans.
The day known as Thanksgiving has extremely racist origins in the United States. It's a holiday marked by the U.S. government that represents the genocide, the enslavement of indigenous peoples. It was marked as a celebration of the bloodshed of Native Americans on their own land by white settlers from Europe who settled on this land.
Many believe Thanksgiving, marking the birth of the U.S., leaves out painful truths about the nation's history. Presenting Thanksgiving to children as primarily a happy time
trivializes the trials and tribulations of the continent's indigenous population. The United American Indians of New England meet each year at Plymouth Rock on the Coles Hill to mourn.
To this day, there are indigenous peoples who are being pushed out of their lands in the United States. The Navajo Nation, Apache Nation, the Chumash Nation, the Iroquois Nation, all across the United States, indigenous people, they're still resisting and fighting the settler colonial project known as the United States.
They gather to remember and reflect in the hope that America will never forget the sacrifices and tragedies of its native people. The United American Indians of New England declared Thanksgiving a national day of mourning 50 years ago. It is a day of remembrance and spiritual connection, as well as a protest of the racism and oppression which Native Americans continue to experience to this day.
So the roots of Thanksgiving are actually a celebration of a massacre of innocent women and young children and families who were on their lands and were brutally murdered in horrific ways by these foreigners who came from England, from Holland, from other European nations. And at its core, this represents the foundation of the U.S. imperialist system of the United States as a nation, as a country.
Native Americans have endured genocide, discrimination, the abduction of their children, deliberate infection with smallpox, forced labor, and other abuses inflicted on them by their non-indigenous oppressors. They were banished by the 1830 Indian Removal Act to largely barren reservations of the American West, and they have remained invisible to the rest of the country ever since. In the U.S. today, Native American households are 19 times as likely as white households to lack indoor plumbing. African Americans and Latin Americans are twice as likely. Some Native American families have to drive an hour or more to retrieve fresh water.
Discrimination against indigenous peoples on the United States remains extremely rampant. Right now, as we speak, indigenous peoples are the poorest nation, the poorest communities of all other groups. They have the highest level of poverty, even compared to Black and Latino communities in the U.S. Indigenous peoples have no sovereignty over their land. They're forced to live on reservations, what they call them, which are huge concentration camps where there is oftentimes no running water, no clean infrastructure, no connectivity to the outside world, very few hospitals, very few schools.
The 300,000 members of the Navajo Nation, which spans New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah, represent 75% of all households in the U.S. living without electricity. The vulnerability of Native Americans to COVID-19 is disproportionately high compared with other populations.
Poverty, discrimination, a lack of health care, lack of education, lack of proper housing, and even worse is repression of indigenous peoples through police brutality, through the military-industrial complex, through violence. One of the biggest issues that has plagued indigenous communities in the United States are work sites, mining sites, backed by these huge European banks.
Poor health amongst Native Americans is caused by many contributing factors, including high rates of poverty, isolated geography, poor education and nutrition, inadequate sewage disposal, unhealthy living conditions, to name a few. Alcoholism is chronic and widespread, spanning all age groups, and heroin use among some tribes is 4 times higher than elsewhere. The serious issues with mental health among Native Americans are closely linked to other risk factors. Native Americans have the highest unemployment rates across the country. All of these problems that were just mentioned are a result of the U.S. and its takeover of Native Americans and their land, which to this day, Native Americans are suffering as a consequence.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear listeners. Welcome to another program of Youth Station.
It's a Youth Station for you.
I was almost going to say that, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do it.
See, everybody comes onto my side.
Yeah, it's rubbed off on me now, man. It's like COVID. It just catches on to you.
Yeah, it's catchy. This is my man, Mehdi Najafi, brother Mehdi Najafi.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Aren't you from some, like, first introduce me.
All right, we've got Muzaffar Haider Abbas.
Muzaffar Abbas.
Abbas Haider. Yeah, no, right, I knew, but I forgot. I skipped the Abbas. I was like, let's add it on.
Wait. Okay. So, aren't you from some, like, really obscure place in the world?
Really, my ancestral lineage is weird, like, proper weird.
Your ancestry has a huge impact on who you become as a person.
Really?
What are some of those things which become unbalanced in your life? Like, for you personally, what do you feel like you do too much?
For me, it's everything that I do personally. Like, when I'm doing something, I do see that at times I'm over-exhausting myself.
Like what?
My daily... Right, does bring us back to one of the quotes of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, but sometimes I see that if I'm studying, I'm overstudying. And when I feel like I'm relaxing, I want to relax, I want to break, I'm doing that too much too. I'm not supposed to be...
Yeah, okay, we excessively do everything that we do. Excessively eating, excessively drinking, we take a break and it's excessively breaking.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Some people might not, but most people do have this aspect of excess in their life that they shouldn't have, right? So do I, yeah. So when I'm taking a break from whatever I'm doing... I tend to prolong it more than I should.
Right.
And when for example, I know I need to sleep right now, and it is going to affect my performance tomorrow or the day after, but I'm still going to carry on doing what, because once you get into it, you don't realize unless, but that's the point. Like, you have to be conscious of what you do and how much you do it constantly so that you carry on. So Imam Ali Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam says that something that is regular and little is better than something that is.
Yeah, it's only one time. Well, I think this is where the whole idea of ifrat and tafrit comes into the picture, right? So, well, first of all, what is ifrat and tafrit?
Overdoing and not doing, for example.
Tafrit actually means underdoing?
It's everything actually means overdoing.
They both mean overdoing.
Overdoing, yeah. Ifrat and tafrit. It means overdoing, but in different aspects of it, right? Mm-hmm. Overdoing what? Not sleeping is the overdoing of not sleeping. Sleeping is the overdoing of sleeping. Am I getting my point
across? I mean, I think you're getting your point across, but telepathically. So anyway, do you oversleep?
Do I? Yeah.
Do you overeat?
Rarely.
Do you overtalk? I mean, this is a radio show, so this doesn't really count.
Yeah, but I sometimes do, and I realize I shouldn't have said things. You know, I'm not saying I don't say things that are wrong. Mm. I do say things that are wrong, and I shouldn't do that. But at times, there are things, كُلُّ مَا يُعْرَفْ مَا يُقَالْ. Everything that is known has not to be said.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we know things that we aren't supposed to say, and we do say them. It doesn't have to be about people. Right? I know that guy did like ghibat and stuff like that. No. But certain things that, mashallah, Allah has given you out of His knowledge that you are supposed to not say everywhere, not tell everyone about those things. Because why did Masum Ali Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam have different answers to the same questions that people used to ask them?
Yeah, for example, in Salah, somebody asked, how am I supposed to focus in Salah? The Imam tells him, you should just keep your eyes on the place where you're going to do sujood. And then the second person comes and he tells him, you should imagine that this is your last salah and you're going to die straight after it. And then the third person comes and he tells him that you should imagine that you're stood before your Lord. Mm-hmm. Right? So these are three completely different answers. To answer the question, it's because the Imam always answers the question according to the capacity of the person who's listening.
Now time's up. Yeah, well, let's go for a break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
In our time, in the time of Ghaiba, we have like an assortment of all these ahadith from the imams, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we sift through them. But the one that speaks to us is the imam speaking to us according to our capacity.
Inshallah, that is the case. Inshallah.
But that means that you have to have a solid capacity in order to accept a lot of the ahadith, especially the strange ones. Because some people will, you know, they'll do ifrat or tafrit in this as well. They'll be like, you know, I accept everything that I hear. And some people will be like, no, I have suspicion of everything that I hear.
So either they're over-skeptical or they are just open doors that you can fill them with anything,
yeah,
which isn't supposed to be like that.
Both of them are wrong.
Yeah. If we do get to the core of what this is, it does apply to every single thing in our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
From, children, how you over-pamper them and how you might neglect them, right?
Good one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Quran says, you're going to love this, right? So this is in regards to, we're coming to like accepting things from people and rejecting things from people, right? To which extent should you be suspicious?
With the lens of ifrat or tafrit.
Right, with the lens of, Islam is always telling you to take the middle path.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So don't be too skeptical and don't be too accepting either.
Yeah.
Don't be a total fool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
إِن جَاءَكُمْ فَاسِقٌ بِنَبَئٍ فَتَبَيَّنُوا. Right? It says, if there comes to you a fasiq with some news, investigate into it.
Yeah.
If you go to Shahid Baqir al-Sadr, and I think it's just a general usuli principle, usuli fiqh, right? It says that, the mafhum of this verse is, if a believer, a trustworthy person comes to you,
don't investigate. Yeah, don't investigate.
Don't investigate. So it becomes the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, by the way, it's such a huge, like, oh my God, it's like, oh.
Oh, yeah,
oh,
you know, one
God,
of the people, one of
the verses. Like,
brothers, he used to say that, you know these usulis, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's an appropriate one, but I'm going to let it out.
Yeah.
You know, and these usuli ulama, when I read them, you know what I imagine in my head, I picture, I was like, what? Another brother was like, what? He's like, it's like wizards. They're like wizards with wands, man. One of them throws a spell and the other's like, no. everyone to his own.
Okay, but then the point that you raised about raising children is really important as well, and I think we should discuss that. But before we come to that, I want to read this verse. So it says, وَلَا تَجْعَلْ يَدَكَ مَغْلُولَةً إِلَىٰ عُنُقِكَ وَلَا تَبْسُطُهَا كُلَّ الْبَسْطِ. Right?
Yeah, so don't wrap your arm around your neck in terms of giving out, right?
Yeah, okay, so this is talking about giving to others. How much should you give to others?
Hmm.
You might have days when you're like, I'm going to give everything. Here you go. I'm blooming Jesus. Take it. And this isn't just about material things. It's also about your emotions, your time, your energies, your efforts, all of your prayers, right? I'm Sayyidah Fatima al-Zahra. I'm going to pray for everybody and forget about myself, right? And then whatever you're doing, you're giving everything.
Yeah.
And other times, it's different for Sayyidah Fatima, salam Allah alayha, right?
Completely, absolutely. Even Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, he gave half of his wealth away, all of his wealth away, stuff like that. That's completely different.
And
he's got it planned out. He's got it sorted.
Yeah, Ifrat al-Tafrit is here as well, where some people say, you know, they're the imams, forget them. You know, we're not even supposed to try to be like them because we can never do it, so why try?
No, that's incorrect.
And then the other extreme is where they go, well, I can be like them and I will be like them. You know, the reality is you'll never, ever reach their that is the reality. You're never going
to
reach them.
You have to face that, man.
But at the same time, yes, we are supposed to take them as role models, but the idea is you take steps in their direction.
Yeah.
Right? You fulfill your own duties first, and then if Allah chooses you, He's going to take you up higher and higher and higher until you get there. But anyway, there's other days where you're like, I ain't doing anything for anyone.
Yeah, one of those sick days that you're sick of everything.
I don't give a flying
fly,
and I'm gonna just not help anybody. I'm not gonna give any charity. I'm not gonna help anybody out there. The Quran is telling you not to do these two extremes, basically. Yeah.
Thank you.
Like, there's a person who never goes to the point, he's like, I'm not going to do anything for anyone. He's always the person to give out. But okay, fair enough. How much do you give out, right? Mm. How much do you... You see this guy, his family is stressed. His children are in need. They're not getting the proper education. But this guy is giving out everything that he has from his time to money and wealth for other people's children, right? But fair enough. In Islam, we do not have something like other people's children, my children. That doesn't have to be there. But yeah, you have a duty. You have the children, they have a right upon you. You know,
yeah.
Your wife, your children, they need to be taken care of also besides right. So when you sorted, when you've done that, this is beautiful. Even when it comes to within the family, your first initial priority is yourself and your wife, not even your children.
Mm-hmm.
Islamically, fiqh, in terms of fiqh, your first obligation is upon yourself and then your wife. When you've got surplus, it goes on to your children.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely different there. Imam alayhi wa sallam, the isar is another beautiful trait, right? Mm-hmm. That you cross yourself. You go over what you need and give it out to others, right?
If that you have the capacity, then by all means do it. But
if you can tolerate that,
by my experience so far, like if I ever try to do that, I get to a point where I'm just like, why the heck am I doing this? Screw all these people, they don't deserve it, right?
Yeah, you know,
if
like,
that explosion is going to take place, then please don't attempt
Don't do that, yeah exactly. You know, and for example, if that's going to end up in you not being able to perform your duties, like even wajibat or stuff like that, then that wasn't really isar in its place. Mm-hmm. You know, it was something that you had made up in your mind. That even for your children in Islam, it's after you and your wife. Mm-hmm. So there are categories, right? But once you take care of your children, you're able to take care of your children, it's still not right to ignore other children. One of the studs here, teachers, he was telling us that they went to see Sayyid Sistani in Najaf.
Mm-hmm.
And the beautiful thing about Maraja and Ulama is they can read people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they understand how I should talk to this person, what his mentality is, right? Even if they're scholars, they know this person is a bit more inclined towards, for example, fiqh and usul, and he's a bit more inclined towards akhlaq or irfaniyat, like that, right? Yeah. They know. And they speak their language.
So
this study his specialization is in Irfan. So it was a group of them actually. They went to Sayyid Sistani and he told them this piece of advice. He's like, try to raise a child other than yours and provide him with every single thing that you've provided your child with.
Whoa, what?
At least once in your life. So that this feeling within yourself and within your soul that this is my child and that is another person's child, this goes away.
Yeah.
Take this out of yourself, right? So what we conclude is do not neglect your children, but when you do pay attention to your children, do not neglect other people. Right.
You're so right. I do that all the time.
We do that all the time.
Yeah, man. Yeah. These other kids, you know, you're just like these snotty other kids. Just, you know, get out of my house kind of thing, you know. You're messing up my house. Why are you ripping my book? And But with your own kids, you're like so compassionate and kind.
You ripped a page out of the book.
You ripped it. Although, no, I think, you feel more entitled to beat your own children. So it gives you that kind of familiarity. Verbally abuse them, but yeah.
So yeah, we talked about not... overdoing or not overdoing, right? So until next time, please allow me and Muzaffar Abbas to be off and take care of yourselves. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Echo has all the potential to become one of the powerful economic and political blocs of the world. if heads of member states strive to remove distrust by adopting independent and progressive policies without any dependence on the exploited West. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading Echo ought to materialize its powerful potentials. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. The president of the Islamic Republic of Iran was the star attraction at the 15th summit of the Economic Cooperation Organization, ECO, in Ashgabat. Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, in his speech at the summit, suggested that the 10-nation ECO create an internal financial mechanism to boost its efficacy, and that Iran, as the founder member, along with Turkey and Pakistan, is ready to help connect the member states' fiber optic networks and promote artificial intelligence projects. He pointed out, in addition to its unique position in enjoying material features such as a population of 500 million that includes young and skilled manpower, as well as ownership of 1/3 of the world's energy resources, the ECO has a privileged identity called Islam. All 10 ECO members, including Iran, Turkey, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and the republics of Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Tajikistan, are Muslim states with a rich history of cultural, religious, social, and lingual commonalities. In the medieval era, Persian was the lingua franca of the whole region, which produced scholars and scientists of repute in various fields, thereby contributing significantly to the development of science, technology, culture, and civilization. Dr. Raisi's emphasis on inter-ECO trade was noted by the media in view of the fact that the abundant natural resources of the vast region spreading from the borders of Europe in the west to those of China and India in the East could make member states immune from the pressures and illegal sanctions of the U.S. and other Western regimes. There are extensive areas of cooperation among ECO countries, including banking transactions, boosting of road, rail, and air networks, setting up of joint industrial projects, and promotion of tourism. Moreover, Iran, with its extensive coastlines on the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman, provides the landlocked countries of Central Asia with the safest and most economical connection to the high seas and the international markets. Among other important issues facing ECO states is security and the need to coordinate policies for confronting the problem of terrorism, whose chief promoter is the U.S., which has transported to Afghanistan the macabrely murderous Takfiri terrorists in thousands in order to keep that country in perpetual turmoil and to send them across the borders to destabilize neighboring countries. Without the least doubt, the regimes in Washington, whether Democrat or Republican, along with the illegal Zionist entity, are the avowed enemies of Islam and Muslim countries and should never be trusted. The Iranian president on the sidelines of the ECHO summit held cordial talks with his counterparts from other member states, including host Gurban Ali Berdimuhamedov, whose country shares a 1,148-kilometers-long border with Iran, stretching from the Caspian Sea to Afghanistan. ECHO has all the potential to become one of the powerful economic and political blocs of the world if heads of member states strive to remove distrust by adopting independent and progressive policies without any dependence on the exploitative West.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Using capacities is a condition to becoming outstanding. This is a part of the speech delivered on November 17, 2021, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of the academic elite and top scientific talents of the country. The second point is that what makes outstanding people outstanding is not merely talent and mental capacity. There are many people who have talent and mental capacity, but these are wasted in them. These capacities are never discovered in them, and they do not use them in a proper manner at all. Thus, they do not turn into outstanding people. What makes outstanding people outstanding is appreciating this truth and this blessing in addition to having talent and mental capacity. This blessing should be appreciated, and due to one's appreciation of this blessing, one should work hard. If a talented, resourceful person does not use his or her talent, and he or she shows laziness, indifference, and negligence, he or she will certainly not become an outstanding person.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
An outstanding person is one who appreciates his talent, uses it, and builds himself into an outstanding person by showing determination and diligence. This person himself is the one who should primarily appreciate this talent in himself, and then secondly, his environment is responsible for appreciating this talent in him. The environment means the government, the officials of the country, parents at a certain age, and teachers or university professors at another age. These people should appreciate his genius, but the main part of appreciating one's talent falls on the outstanding person himself. The soft war waged by the colonizers against the nation's talents. Of course, this was with regards to outstanding people in general. However, this also applies to the country as a whole. Our country has a high average intelligence than the global average. This is not a mere claim, rather it is a proven fact.
David Matthews, professor of virology at the University of Bristol, England, said, if you have been double-jabbed and then infected with Delta variant of coronavirus and recovered, then you have got a very broad, very effective immune response that probably covers pretty much any variant that you can think of. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article written by Linda Goetz under the heading, What Does Appearance of Omicron Variant Mean for the Double Vaccinated? The article was published by The Guardian Daily. Please stay tuned. The emergence of Omicron has prompted widespread speculation that it may be more resistant to COVID-19 vaccines than existing variants, including Delta. But what does that mean for the average double-vaccinated people? All the vaccines currently available in the UK work by training the immune system against the coronavirus spike protein, the key it uses to infect cells by binding to the ACE2 receptor. Omicron possesses more than 30 mutations in this protein, including 10 in the so-called receptor binding domain, RBD, the specific part that latches on to this receptor. Delta has 2 BRD mutations. However, even with all these changes, there will still be areas to which antibodies and T-cells, which grow in response to previous infection or vaccination, will be able to respond. Danny Altman, professor of immunology at Imperial College London, said, "If you scribble the mutations on to a picture of the spike protein's crystal structure and relate that to all of the main antibody activities that we know about, it looks kind of terrifying, like most of your key neutralizing antibody target will be shot to pieces. So what's going to be left of your immune protection?" Altman said, and yet the soundings we are getting from South Africa seem to be saying that it doesn't look severe. And the people who are going to hospital are the unvaccinated rather than the vaccinated, as if vaccination was still buying them some cover. Then there are T cells, immune cells that recognize and attack virus-infected cells and educate antibody-producing B cells about the viral risk they are facing. Altman said, "We all think that the T cells can see the differences between variants and that the T cell repertoire is much more impervious to it. So that might also buy you some protection." The question is, how much protection? We know that people who have been double jabbed can and do get infected with the Delta variant, although the chances of this happening are approximately 3 times lower than if they hadn't been vaccinated. More importantly, vaccinated individuals are roughly 9 times less likely to die if they do become infected. Although, it looks as though infection with Omicron is even more likely, Professor Paul Morgan, an immunologist at Cardiff University, said, "I think a blunting rather than a complete loss of immunity is the most likely outcome," adding, "The virus can possibly lose every single epitope on its surface, because if it did that, a spike protein couldn't work anymore." So, while some of the antibodies and T-cell clones made against earlier versions of the virus or against the vaccines may not be effective, there will be others, which will remain effective. Further boosting that protection by broadening access to third doses of COVID-19 vaccines is therefore a good idea. Morgan said, "If half or two-thirds or whatever it is of the immune response is not going to be effective, and you're left with the residual half, then the more boosted that is, the better. For individuals who have been double-jabbed and infected with Delta, the picture is better still." David Matthews, professor of virology at the University of Bristol, said, "If you have been double-jabbed and then infected with Delta and recovered, then you have got a very broad, very effective immune response. That probably covers pretty much any variant that you can think of. This is because such individuals have been exposed to the virus through infection with Delta and the spike protein from the original Wuhan strain through vaccination." Matthew said, "It means you have got an antibody response that covers both classic and modern strains and a very broad T-cell response, not just against the spike protein, but against all other proteins that SARS-CoV-2 makes, and that's incredibly helpful." The biggest worry is for those who remain unvaccinated. Matthew said, "If they are right that this virus is even better at transmitting than Delta, and it looks like they are, what will happen is that it will speed up the rate at which this virus finds the unvaccinated and puts them in hospitals, and that will therefore increase the pressure on NHS," adding, "That is what will trigger a lockdown if hospitalization rates go above a certain threshold, whatever that is. However, there are some reasons to be optimistic. The first is that we don't yet know how the Omicron variant will behave in a highly vaccinated population, such as the UK's. Dr. Peter English, a retired consultant in communicable disease control, said it is quite possible that people who have had two or better still three doses of existing vaccines will be well protected against it, adding, but it is also possible that we will have much less protection from existing vaccines against this new variant. We do not yet have enough information to know. Another is the existence of antiviral drugs such as molnupiravir, to which Omicron should still be responsive. Nearly 500,000 doses of this twice-daily pill were due to be delivered this month and will be given as a priority to elderly COVID patients and those with particular vulnerabilities such as weakened immune systems, through a national study being run by the NHS. Because the drug is most effective when given in the early stages of infection, the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, MHRA, recommends it is used as soon as possible after a positive test for COVID and within 5 days of symptoms appearing. Existing therapies such as the anti-inflammatory drug dexamethasone are also likely to work against Omicron because it targets the body's response to the virus rather than the virus itself. Finally, there is the possibility of modifying the existing vaccines to match the Omicron variant if it really does evade vaccine-induced immune responses to a significant degree, something we won't know for a number of weeks. Dr. Peter English said mRNA and vector platforms allow very rapid changes to be made to the precise antigens used. This means that it would be possible relatively quickly, within a matter of months, to produce a vaccine with antigens tailored to a new variant. Omicron is undoubtedly a bump in the road leading us out of this pandemic and quite possibly a major pothole. But based on what we know so far, it seems unlikely to send us back to where we were a year ago. However, the more people who are fully jabbed and have access to those third doses, the more certain of this we are likely to be.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Gimpo City, already famous for its busy airport, now boasts a new landmark, a park just 1.4 kilometers from North Korea. The Aegibong Peace Eco Park, the South's nearest park to the north, is already open. It features an observatory, an exhibition hall, and much more, drawing large numbers of tourists eager to get a detailed look at North Korea. The park is scheduled to be complete by June, when a skywalk linking the two facilities will become operational.
My thought about the unification between North Korea and South Korea has been changed. People coming here, I think, and North Korean people are far away from our ordinary life.
Aside from telescopes, there's a peace bell made of melted metal, including empty cartridges found at the remains of soldiers killed in the Korean War. There is also a Christmas tree which once stood at a South Korean military observatory here.
Christian groups used to hold a Christmas Eve service next to a huge lit Christmas tree visible from the north across the estuary at this observatory and broadcast the service into the north by loudspeakers. This angered Pyongyang.
I can view apartments and farmers working in fields as close as Gaepung County, and I see a higher living standard than I thought the north had.
In the exhibition hall, the north can be viewed through a glass wall. Items on display reveal Egibong's history and the need to preserve peace in the estuary, an ecological treasure trove untouched by humans since the Korean War's end. It is home to endangered species of birds, among others. There is also a unification-promoting virtual reality train that visitors take to Gyesong right across the estuary from the park, the next best thing to actual travel.
Visitors see images recovered with 3D technology of UNESCO World Heritage Sites in Gyesong.
The 17-day Gimpo Peace Festival, held last month to mark the park's launch and foster North-South peace and reunification, featured a tour press briefing by Gimpo's mayor and a peace conference by ambassadors on October 5th, when foreign journalists got a sneak preview of the park before it opened 2 days later.
I believe visitors do not need to fear a North Korean attack here, since the world's powerful nations will not let a second Korean War occur.
Egibong Peace Eco Park, which has replaced the South's military observatory in Gimpo, has been popular, drawing 15,000 tourists since opening. Not surprisingly, the park, which offers free admission through this year, is due to start charging an entrance fee soon, beginning next year. Jennifer Chang, Gimpo, South Korea.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has attended the 15th summit of the Economic Cooperation Organization in Turkmenistan. Addressing the one-day summit on Sunday, he assured Iran's neighbors that Washington's sanctions will have no bearing on regional cooperation and interaction.
The United States' cruel sanctions against Iran will not have the slightest impact on the Islamic Republic of Iran's policy of maximum interaction with neighboring and regional countries.
Raisi called on member states to work together in a range of fields, from the creation of a regional electricity market to water transfer projects, as well as energy ventures. He also proposed creating an internal financial mechanism by the Economic Cooperation Organization to boost its efficacy. On the sidelines of the summit, Raisi held a string of high-level bilateral meetings to discuss ways to develop relations. The Iranian president has time and again said boosting cooperation with neighboring countries is one of the major goals of his administration. He believes that approach will help improve economy as well as peace and stability in the region. Iran took a big step in this regard in September when it formally became a full member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That's a Eurasian political, economic, and security alliance, accounting for about one-third of the world's land and exporting trillions of dollars in goods annually. Recently, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Kani traveled to several regional countries, including Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Oman, for talks on expanding bilateral cooperation. This month, he also went to four European countries, namely France, Germany, Britain, and Spain, where similar talks took place. Bagheri Kani's European tours came ahead of talks set to begin Monday in Vienna. The talks taking place between Iran and other remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal aim to remove sanctions on Tehran. Those sanctions took effect after the U.S. left the nuclear deal in 2018 as part of a so-called maximum pressure campaign, seen as an attempt to isolate Iran in international arena. More than 3 years into that policy, it seems that it has failed, with Iran expanding ties with countries in the region and beyond, while being accepted by more international bodies.
Each year, nearly 18 million visitors pass through Chinatown. But since the start of the pandemic in 2019, business owners here have struggled with a drop in sales, vandalism, and boycotts.
East and Southeast Asians make up the UK's third largest racial minority. Nonetheless, they are underrepresented here, depicted in a negative light on television, and anti-Asian racism is alive and well. Meanwhile, British politicians stand accused of making matters worse.
Remember Jacob Rees-Mogg, the leader of the House? Only recently he said something about yellow peril, and then he said, oh, I didn't know it's a racist statement. That's what the British government is. They continuously making statement about, you know, Chinese, and then saying, oh, I didn't know it was racist. I mean, in other circumstances, if you say the N-word,